I'd like to settle down, but they won't let me. Going round the world and I found my girl. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man.
It's time to head out on the road and grab a slice of Americana. It's the Nocturnal Journey on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal with Dave Hoekstra. So on a little road trip, a couple months ago, we ended up in Nashville, Tennessee, ended up at the basement studio of the great Dan Penn, the singer-songwriter, just really, really a down-home guy. We walk into his house, his wife Linda greets us, and Dan's a legend. He wrote Dark End of the Street, James Carr hit. Him and Spooner Oldham wrote I'm Your Puppet for James and Bobby Purify, Do Right Woman, Do Right Man for Aretha Franklin, wrote Cry Like a Baby. They wrote Cry Like a Baby for Alex Chilton and the Box Tops. And Dan produced the Box Tops hit The Letter. So Dan was real gracious with his time. So we've got this little segment. So listen to the great Dan Penn.
Here in my home studio in Nashville with Dave Hoekstra.
WGN.
WGN.
One of America's greatest songwriters.
Our favorite station.
Well, before we start, I got some radio questions for you, but you wrote I'm Your Puppet, you wrote Dark End of the Street, you wrote Left the Water Run. I mean, what do you have a favorite of all the hits, The Letter? I mean, all the hits... I mean, the box, I'm sorry, now I screwed up. Cry Like a Baby?
Well, there's a lot of songs I've got I like, but I guess I have to come down with I'm Your Puppet because it was the first really big record that me and Spooner wrote, and there's just something about it that don't go away. You know, you can hear that record, that Purify record on the radio now today, and it's just like, oh, man, I wish it was like that again, you know? It was that time, and it had the best sound.
Timeless. It's a timeless record.
It's a timeless record. I mean, I've cut it. Other people have cut it. Nobody ever touched the Purifies. It just had that, you know, locked into that time. Also, James Carr's record, Dark End of the Street, same way. Nobody can ever touch it. It's like it's got something built around it.
Talk about how that song came together.
Well, Spooner and I usually, we wrote every night, seems like, or at least maybe three or four nights a week. And our night would be like we'd go over to Singleton's Barbecue or somewhere like that and eat dinner around 5:30, 6. And we'd have a pretty good supper and some barbecue or whatever. And then we'd go to Fame, which was only a mile away. And we'd go in there and we'd write till we couldn't write no more. And then, you know, the people would come in about 6 o'clock. Well, we're through. And Rick and his crew, the day crew. So anyway, I had bought a little 12-string Stella guitar, a little cheap guitar, but it had this cutest little sound, and I would ding, 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 and I'm going ding, 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 and Spooner pulling under me went dum, 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 and all of a sudden I started singing, pull a string, and like I said, I liked things back then. It had the puppet was the name of it. And that was what it took. It took me a minute to get over what the Purifiers had done to it. I felt like it was slaughtered, my song, because they got I'm Your Puppet. And that wasn't as good as The Puppet to me. Today I listen to it and I say they did exactly right. Because after I got a couple of big checks, I said, boy, that is a lovely record.
Dark End of the Street. One more I'm going to ask you to go over. Dark End of the Street.
Dark End of the Street. Well, me and Chips were here at a disc jockey convention in Nashville. And that's back when they used to have some good ones. And I believe we were in the Anchor Motel.
Okay.
And there's a key to an Anchor Motel. Somebody gave me that. That ain't the key to the room we had. But we were at the Anchor Motel, and we were playing cards with Don Schroeder, who is the guy who produced I'm Your Puppet. And so me and Chips and Dunn, we played a long time poker. And then we got tired, and so me and Chips decided to go. We had a room next to the room where we were playing poker. And we decided to take a break, and we went into the this room next door, and there was a little guitar, and I played around on it a while, and I don't remember how we came to the dark end of the street. I had been around Steal Away, Jimmy Hughes. I'd watched that record be cut. I was a big fan of the Cheatin' Song. I mean, I go all the way back to Hank Williams' Cheatin' Heart. You know, I like Cheatin' Songs at that time. And so I think every songwriter with his salt always wanted to write a great Cheatin' Song. It's just part of the plan. Because there was a lot of them kind of songs being written sometime. And so anyway, we started, and I know I'm holding the guitar at first, and I'm playing these chords that a good musician wouldn't play, you know. And then he started playing, and we wrote the song. I mean, don't ask me exactly how we did it, but we wrote the song. And we thought it was good, and then we just went back to playing cards. And then we went back to Memphis. And then we got down there, and I kind of put it down one day, me and him did, and just me and him. And the guy from Gold Wax, I can't think of his name, he was around, he came around, and James Carr was about to come up to cut. And the way it was at American is, ever who comes up to cut, they get the best song around at that time, you know. Especially if Moman's cutting it, you know. He's going to want to cut a good song. And there he is. He's got part of the song. And James Carr, time for James to cut. Well, people at Gold Wax were flipped because of that song. And about that time, they decided to change the board and the gear at American to be like Fame. They wanted to put the UA stuff in. Because all Chips had at that time was kind of cheap little stuff. It wasn't he'd cut some stuff, but he'd keep on dancing on it, and the Sandy Posey and stuff like that, but it was limited. You know, it wasn't as good as that UA stuff. So that very week that he was going to cut, they tore the studio up, so we went to High, and High Studios, and we tracked it over there, and James wasn't there, but I think I sang the pilot. And we got back over to the, and then we brought the track back over to American, and they were about to put James on. We were, me and Chips and James were in the studio, and they'd had the new UA stuff. And so we're playing it to James, and James is singing it. But he ain't kidding it. He's just kind of sleeping with it, you know. And we tried him two or three times. Finally said, Chips said, Danny, go out there and sing it for him. So I thought, oh, big voice. So I go out and I give it all I got. You know, I walked up to James. I said, James, let me see your phone. Let me try it one time for you. So I was the wake-up guy. So I sung it pretty good. And then I handed him back the phones. He said, I think I got it now. And the very next cut, he killed it. And then I did a little harmony behind that. And while I was out doing the, got my harmony vocal on there, I said, hey, Chips, so you got another track? He said, yeah, I think so. Why? I said, I got an idea. So I said, wrote it one time. I didn't even know exactly what I was going to do, but I had something back there stirring. You know, it was kind of like Wayne looking well with them heels, you know. And I became the black woman on the end, doing the, you know, very high for me. Kind of like my mother, I was singing way up over my head, but that made the record, you know, and it was a killer record. There's something about the High Studio that can't be topped, you know. It's got a certain, as it's putting out, it's sucking, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's like a built-in compressor down there or something. At least it was in them old days.
Willie Mitchell Studio,
and. I think that was why that record sounded like it did. That's why it's so, it ain't never going to leave.
I think one of the greatest five soul songs ever.
Yeah, and records.
Yeah.
And they just put it into some kind of a deal out in Hollywood this summer.
Again? Well, it got new life in the Commitments, didn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm talking about they've made it in the Grammy Museum. It is one of the, now it's one of the, it's won a Grammy as a single. We don't get nothing, you know.
For our listeners who, I interviewed James toward the end of his life, but what shape was he in? I mean, when I interviewed him, there was something going on. He was possessed by something, but I mean, the voice was still there, but he wasn't very easy to talk to.
Yeah, I don't really know for sure just what he did and all, but I think he was a pot smoker, and I don't think he could handle it very well. And maybe, I don't know, maybe other drugs, or maybe just what the doctor gave him, I don't know. But he had a few problems, and I don't know what they were, except that he was always a little off axis, seemed like. And the day that we were putting on Dark in the Street, of course, he was younger and he was fresher and he hadn't been, you know, gone through as much life as when you're talking about. But he was kind of sleepy. In other words, he sounded good, but he didn't mean it when he came through the speaker, you know. It's like, hey, what's wrong with this picture? That's when Chip said, Dan, go sing it for him. Well, I couldn't sing it good as he could, but I could sure threaten him, you know what I mean? And I woke him up, and he said, I think I got it now. And I think he got whatever I was going to give him, you know. He got, like, you got to mean it. And he did, and he did it so subtly. You know, I'm screaming at the top of my voice, but he just sang it his way, but he meant the words all of a sudden.
What was it like?
It is transferable, you know. You can transfer something like that to somebody if they're willing to listen and you're willing to try. You ain't scared. You got to be brave, you know, to walk up to James Carr and start singing. But he had a big old voice. And I never had a big old voice, you know. But I knew the song inside and out. And he'll never top that record.
Living history right there. I'll be back with more Dan Penn. He's going to talk about his roots in Alabama and the power of radio after these commercials on WGN.
Give me a ticket for an aeroplane. Ain't got time to take a fast train. Lonely days are gone. I'm a-going home.
Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal on WGN. That was written by our late friend Wayne Carson from Springfield, Missouri, and Dan Penn was behind the wheel as a producer. He was born as Wallace Daniel Pennington in Vernon, Alabama, and he went to Muscle Shoals at the age of 16. Here's Dan talking about his roots.
You grew up in Alabama, for our listeners who are getting acquainted with you on this segment. But tell us about the power of radio when you were growing up. You listened to WLAC out of Nashville, which I know about Hoss Allen and all that, but I don't know much about the Birmingham scene. And I remember one time talking to you about saying, well, kind of a pop writer too. So you were hearing kind of pop music out of Birmingham. Tell me the sounds that you were hearing on radio.
Well, I was hearing all the black music on WLAC at night throughout the South. If you didn't have your radio on WLAC, there's something bad wrong with you. Because, I mean, every night it was laying it down. John R. and you know, all those guys, Herman Gazzard, and those guys went all night, you know, to 4 a.m. And even before I got my driver's license, I've got a little green radio, and I got my own room out in the country where we live. I got my little green radio, Sylvania or something like that. And, you know, I got it turned real low because Daddy and Mama and the girls, they're all asleep. But I'm listening to that. I'm listening to that black music. And just enthralled with it. You know, it was all brand new. It was delicious. You know, it was just great. And I really got attached to it. Like I say, later on, the rock and roll thing came along with Jerry Lee and Elvis and all those guys. And that was superb. But it wasn't long Ray Charles got on the scene, and all of a sudden I said, yeah, I know where that came from, WLAC. And, you know, I heard Aretha when she was just a girl. I was just a boy, and all those people. I listened to the black preachers, too, you know.
You listened to Reverend C.L. Franklin, didn't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I listened to her father, yeah. Yeah. And she'd come out and sing, you know, just she's kind of a timid little voice, you know. And I had her Columbia records because I'd kind of kept up with her. So when she came to Muscle Shoals, I knew all about that girl. And a lot of the guys down there didn't. They knew she was Reverend Franklin's daughter, but they hadn't spent no time with her. But I had. So when they cut, when I heard they was going to cut her down there, I had nothing to do with it except Chips got called for the to play guitar on a session, and he and I were, we were real close and running hard during those, that time. And I said, well, I'm going too. And then he played, we made a little tape of Do Right Woman, just me and him in Memphis before we went down there. And he played it to Wexler. And Jerry came to me and said, Dan, baby, I'll cut that Do Right song, but you don't have the words for the bridge. And I said, well, Jerry, I'll get you some words. So I went in, I said, I'll go over this closet and I'll write the words. And so I'm over in the closet, and we got words. We got the chords for the bridge, but no words. So I'm over there, and I'm thinking, God, what you got yourself into? And so I said, okay, what's your favorite song? Let's steal something if you can't make it up. So my favorite song was at that time, well, It's a Man's World, James Brown. So I said, they say that it's a man's world. About that time, the door opened and Mr. Wexford took his head in and said, what you got, Dan? What you got, Dan, baby? I said, Jerry, I got, here's what I got. I got, they say that it's a man's world. He said, oh, Dan, I've got your next part. And I said, what's that? And he said, but you can't prove that by me. I wrote that down. I said, thank you, Jerry. So now I've got two lines. I'm really moving now. And so I'm standing in there. I'm thinking, what next? And next thing I know, the door opening, there was Aretha. Dan, baby, what you got for Aretha? So I said, that's what I got, Aretha. They say they're just a man's world, but you can't prove that by me. She said, oh, I've got your next part, honey. And I said, what's that? She said, as long as we're together, baby, show some respect for me. I wrote that down. Thank you, Aretha. So, you know, suddenly we had a song, and that's the day that, that's the only day they cut. They cut I Never Loved a Man in Fame, and they cut a little part of a track. I mean, it was all the way through, but it was stingy. Nobody was playing nothing. It was just, and I just said, and I had to see what she wasn't saying it because she didn't know it. And so then they said, well, we're going to continue in New York. So I said, I'm going. So me and Chips got off the elevator with all the other guys, and Mr. Wexler said, Dan, you and Chips come with me. And they took us into the control room and played that record of her playing piano and her sisters and everything on top of that track. Whew. That was quite a deal.
Yeah.
I looked over that 8-track. I said, you can do anything with an 8-track. So that was one of them unbelievable moments.
Yeah.
For our local, for Chicago listeners, what about, did you and I, we talked once about when Chess sent Irma Thomas to Muscle Shoals?
What?
Chess sent Irma Thomas to Muscle Shoals? Irma did, and didn't, she did some of your stuff down in Muscle Shoals. Irma Thomas.
Yeah, it wasn't Chess.
It wasn't Chess?
It was some guys out of Louisiana. Can't remember their name, but they had a little label. Now, maybe she came up there after I left Muscle Shoals with Rick. I'm not sure.
Yeah, you know, okay.
But I wasn't even part of that.
Okay.
But I did cut a couple of sides on her. One of them was Zero Willpower, and which just never happened, but it got on that, it was on that label. And I cut a couple of things on her and stayed in touch with her a long time. And she cut a bunch of my songs in Memphis. My Heart's in Memphis.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So what are you doing now? Give us an update.
I'm taking it easy all I can. No, I am. That's a fact. I've been on holiday for quite a few years, but still I'm active. I'm trying to write a song every now and again. I'll write a song with somebody, but a lot of my co-writers have passed on, and I'm still playing shows whenever I get a chance. But as you see, I'm ready to cut. I'm cutting a guy in here in May, Jim Croce, his son, A.J. Croce, he and I wrote a song the other day, And so we're going to cut. We're going to have a band in and cut a couple sides on him and see what happens.
What's it? Can you say what the name of the song is?
The name of the song is The Other Side of Love. Pretty good. You want to hear it?
Should I leave this on?
Mm-mm.
No.
No, you can't do that.
Okay.
I am still active if the change comes along. I still love. I'm a studio rat. You know,
yeah.
I go play a few shows, but I started out a studio rat. I'm still a studio rat, and I love the back. You know, being back here writing songs and producing records. I feel like I'm. You know, I'm not as have as much energy as I did have, but. I still got enough to get a good sound, and you know, like I said before, if it wasn't for this studio, I'd probably be on out of Nashville by now. But I've got this studio, and it's a good one, and sounds good in here. And so I'm trying to work as long as I can, but I'm 74 years old, you know.
Yeah.
So there's gonna be a quitting point, you know. But I'm trying to get all I can out of it.
American Treasure. Dan Penn. And for our final segment after David Jennings in the news, he's going to talk about his partnership with Spooner Oldham.
I got the strangest feeling. My baby ain't sitting home tonight. Don't think she is.
Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal on 720 WGN. That is Dan Penn. That's 1963, one of his fame recordings. He called that his black throat, but man, I could just listen to that all night. But here's the wrap-up of our interview with Dan Penn from Nashville from a couple months ago.
Let's tell our listeners who may not know about your relationship with Spooner Oldham, how you guys got together and how often do you see him now?
Well, Spooner was, he was one of the people that I met at Spar Music, which in Florence. That was Tom Stafford's place. I met Donnie Fritz there. I met David Briggs, Norbert Putnam, Jerry Kerrigan, everybody that was important, Rick Hall, Billy Sherrill, Herschel Williams, and all those people that were there, Peanut Montgomery. I met everybody in Muscle Shoals at that little studio when I was 17. 16, 17, and I'd gone up there, and so Spooner, he was just one of the guys that kind of came in there, you know. He was skinny as a rail, boy, he was skinny, I was skinny too, and we became friends, and, you know, we became friends was riding around, so me and Spooner and Fritz, we were the
Donnie Fritz,
yeah. we were the Three Musketeers. And our deal was to go from eating place to eating place, trying to find the best BLT, you know. And every night, that's what we did. We rode around and looking for girls and looking for BLTs and writing a song now and again, you know. That Fritz was my first co-writer. The first song that he and I wrote was Rainbow Road. And that was my first co-writer. Because I'd had his Bluebird Blue, and that's what got me to Florence. And so I suddenly seen that, and he was a keyboard player, and I loved that. You know, I loved the support it gave you. And then it wasn't long after that, me and Spooner started writing a little bit, and we kind of got some, I was a Rick's writer, and then he kind of came to Rick and became a writer, and we began to write a little bit. And we got like Let's Do It Over with Joe Simon. We started getting a few little R&B cuts, Jimmy Hughes, stuff like that. And then we kind of got us a little place down by the river, and we had a little writing room, you know, with a piano and a little recorder and where we could play records. And, you know, I'd go buy Motown Records and Stax Records and stuff like that. Come in there and we'd just melt. Sit down and listen to them and just have the biggest time. And then we might write a song, and some of them sounds kind of like them songs. That's where they come from. Because, you know, the fact is, if you write somebody something that they're used to, they're more liable to cut it. And so we wrote a lot of songs that, on some of this stuff that you was talking about, the old Fame stuff. I guess you heard some Motown influenced things stuff, you know. So we weren't copying them, but we were influenced. And you got to have some influence. I mean, you can't just put it out there.
We're going to play, I'm going to play one of these Fame tracks on our segment. And earlier we talked about Come On Over and Keep On Talking. But, you know, I want to play, maybe we'll play Power of Love. Was there anybody, when you were doing that, again, we talked about this earlier, but, I mean, you just, there's so much soul, there's so much blackness in your voice. Did anybody say, is this white guy doing these tracks?
Yeah, they did, but it wasn't a big push. You know, I'll tell you the truth, I used to play some around Birmingham. I could play my gig, and then, you know, around 12 or 1, whenever we got through, or 2, it was all an idea, you know. We'd go to another club, and they was quiet guys that blow my doors off doing R&B. So it wasn't like I was the only one around. They were all over the South, and everybody was influenced by Ray Charles and James Brown. And they were very easy to copy. They were so, you know, they were easy to copy, and everybody wanted to sound like them two guys, as well as other black artists. And I remember going into a guy in Birmingham one time playing an organ, white guy, and he was Ray Charles. As far as I was concerned, he had it down to me to the T, you know. So there was things said, you know, like, you sure do sound black. Well, I'm trying to, you know. That's kind of the way I was. But, you know, you couldn't, white guy couldn't get on a black radio station back then, and really can't now. And maybe somebody could, but I couldn't. And it's probably a good thing because, you know, I'm very happy with the way my deal turned out. I started out wanting to sing, and I'm a singer. I sing pretty good sometimes. But I wouldn't trade what I do back here in the studio, writing songs and trying to make a good record. I wouldn't trade that for a bunch of vocal hits, you know. And I'm not really trying to get a big hit now on myself. I just want to remain viable and alive, you know, where people can say, well, hey, he's still singing, still making records. He'll come do a show for us. So, you know, I'm like that. And then, you know, otherwise, I'm just going down and work on my old car.
What do you remember about Power of Love?
I remember I was very excited because, you know, we wrote that song. I loved it. Power of love can move a mountain. I just like that.
Yeah, know? Right.
And it just stayed with you. And it was one of our better up-tempo things. Pretty nice thing.
Didn't Greg Allman cover it?
I don't know, did he?
I believe so, yeah.
I hear he's in Muscle Shoals cutting now, and I think they're cutting one of our songs. I don't know which one.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sitting here thinking. I don't have all of my Wikipedia or Google in front of me, but I'm thinking about American songwriters. I mean, when I think of Penn Oldham, I mean, it's almost at the top of the list, right? Holland, Dozier, Holland, and Motown. I mean, I'm talking about teams. I mean,
we were real lucky. We were standing right in there where we were.
It's like you're at the top.
Well, we're up there with them, some of them, you know. I mean, I know a lot of people consider us that way. I don't think too much about that, you know, really. But since we're talking about it, we did really well. And, you know, yeah, you can mention them two names in England, and everybody will go, where are they?
Yeah.
You know, and even in America a little bit. But, you know, America has never been too big with the people in the background. It's more or less the star thing, and, you know, it's getting better. But, you know, in England, Japan, Australia, places like that, Europe, they know everything. They know who played on the session. They've seeked it out. They had to be very, very smart to find out who played and who wrote. And, you know, that Penn Oldham was showing up a whole lot back then. And, we go to England. Me and Spooner can go to England. You know, we get a pretty good crowd.
How often do you see him?
I see him, I seen him down in I seen him in Florence the other night. They had the Alabama Music Hall of Fame, and they inducted us the last time, year before last. They have one every other year, and they invited me down. So me and him and Fritz and our wives sat at the same table, and you know I see him, and we played a couple more. We played maybe two more shows last year, but I don't see him. You know, he lives down there, and he has his own things he does. You know, he works a lot. So, you know, we hadn't gotten together to write some songs, but we're threatening. That's kind of the way it is, you know. After you do so much like that, like what we done, it just kind of wears out sometimes, you know.
That's a friend of all of us, the great Dan Penn. Our next guest, Kent Rose, we're talking about it. He sounds like he writes. He's got that deep pocket of soul.